It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favourite. Oh, we don't need any of that shit. Tom Aspinall's the bloody heavyweight champion of the world. Let's go!
Oh, Tommy Aspinall! Tommy! Fuck. Aspinall, man. What a fucking... Oh, man. I'm just so pumped for him.
That was absolutely unbelievable. I'm still on cloud nine after watching him. He did a Pavlovich on Pavlovich, man. No one thought he would knock him out. Everyone thought, okay, he can get in and out on the feet. He can touch him up. He can take him down. And he did it all, man. Mm-hmm. Went in to Sergei Pavlovich's realm, took licks off him, and knocked him out. I can't believe it. I'm so happy for the guy.
Tommy Aspinall. Aspinall.
Tommy Aspinall. Tommy Aspinall.
So fucking good. Yeah, dude, you're right. He took a lick. He took a punch or two. Hey, and I, like, literally almost shat myself. Just like, oh, no. This can't be the correct timeline. And, man, I'm so glad we are in this one. That was, yeah, absolutely stunning, man. Just,
you know what's crazy? Because he actually got two achievements on that night. He obviously won the UFC interim heavyweight title of the world, but he also broke a Guinness World Record to be the first man on record to get punched by Sergei Pavlovich and not have his head explode immediately.
Man, and as the guys were saying as well, like, I mean, like, Sergei's the hardest puncher in the gym that he trains at, like, by far. Everyone's scared of him. And, you know, even Tommy Aspinall coming out saying he's scared of him as well. He's just fucking crazy. Oh, but man, so happy for him. Hey, another English champion. Oh,
another one, baby. Count it two. That's just the beginning. The UK takeover of the UFC is well and truly underway. And just the circumstances, everything that he'd worked for his entire life after the knee injury, he was weighing up whether he should be continuing in this sport. Maybe he was going to walk away from it and do something different. And he said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm doubling down. I'm going all in on this and I'm doing it the right way. And boy, has he done it the right way. He did it the hard way as well, off the couch, not properly training. And then he gets in the gym and he does a back injury. So he barely trains for the 2 weeks that he's got leading up to the fight. I mean, you didn't hear anything about it. The fact that all of that was kept quiet and kept locked down shows you how tight-knit his team and his camp is. Mm. That word didn't get out. No one knew about it. And he was just, no excuses made. He went in, he did what he needed to do, and he knocked out Sergei Pavlovich, which just shows you how friggin' hard Tom Aspinall hits. But not only that, he moves like a middleweight. He cuts angles. He's got a ground game. He is the prototypical modern-day heavyweight champion. And let me tell you this, John Jones, no John Jones. Stipe Miocic, no Stipe Miocic. Tom Aspinall is the baddest man on the planet. 100%. I pick him 10 times out of 10 to beat John Jones and Stipe Miocic on the same damn night if he wants to.
Oh, big calls. I love it. And I think so too. It's something special, man, about someone just being so well-rounded. But I think what blows me away is just how humble and kind he is, and how he doesn't need to do this weird media character thing that found their way to do after the whole McGregor success. He just seems kind, honest, loves his family, talks about, as you said, tight-knit group. He only needs the people that he's around, and he's found success. And fuck, man, it's just so fucking good to watch.
Mate, you absolutely nailed it. And there's two ways I think the fighters can go when they're building themselves, when they're trying to, you know, not build a persona, but connect with an audience and have people take interest in what they do. There's obviously, you can play the heel, you can play the villain, you can be the outspoken guy and people will tune in to watch you lose. You can be the big brash talker, the chatter, the Conor McGregor, but you've got to be exceptional to be able to do that. Exceptional on the microphone. You have to be quick-witted. You have to be fleet of foot and fleet of mind. To be honest, everyone thinks that Conor McGregor is doing a character. I also just think Conor McGregor is mentally unhinged and like that's just him. But I think what fans connect with the most, no matter what, is just authenticity. Tom is just that guy. Tom Aspinall seems like the guy you could just sit and have a chat with about sports and sink 15 pints with. Well, he could sink 15 pints and I'd try, really give it a good go. But he genuinely...
You're shitting yourself at 10.
But he's just an authentic dude. He's honest. He doesn't put on a facade and a persona. And you get that because he's completely comfortable with who he is and his own abilities as a fighter. For him to sit up there as the co-main event and really as the media had the most interest in Tom Aspinall. And the reason why is because he's a native English speaker. And I think it's a lot easier for the media to ask him questions, get sound bites out of him. He was also giving the most and he was the most open. Like, it's obviously a lot more difficult to ask Poatan questions through the translator. Geary's English is very good, but at the same time, you still don't get those same classic sound bites because there's a bit of a delay. It takes some time. He works things out. And I'm not skitting that. I'm not knocking that at all. And of course, Sergey needs a translator as well. So with Tom, there is
Half the fucking Manchester accents. Sorry, I'm going to say he's doing really well for a man from Manchester. I mean, like half the people on the roster, you get Molly McCann, you get Paddy Pimblett on the microphone. And oh my God,
did you say that? There was in the post-fight press conference, there was a Scouse journalist asking Dana White questions. And every time he had to go, what did he say? He had to like ask the person. Now, part of that is because Dana White's got lost hearing in his ear, one of his ears. But it was hilarious that he just had to kept asking for clarification from what the Scouser was asking. That did make me chuckle. But yeah, back to Tom. He is just his authentic self. And he gives completely honest answers that he's not worried about what the media is going to say. And he's also not worried about anyone else is going to say. He can sit up there and say, yeah, I'm scared shitless about fighting this fucking Russian polar bear that's got anvils for fists because he knows he can get in that cage and knock him out as well. And it's just so unbelievable. And the way that both men, and I've got to give credit to Sergey Pavlovich here as well. He seems like a dude. Sergey Pavlovich might be the Russian version of Tom Aspinall. Seems like a cool dude when you got the interpreted answers from him, completely open and chill and very honest as well. Just a nice guy. And they hugged. They hugged before they threw down. They touched gloves and embraced. I was like, what's going on here? There was not an iota of bad blood. And let's be honest, we love it when there's bad blood between two dudes who want to get in there and punch piss out of each other. But sometimes it's very, very cool that the two dudes at the peak of their powers fighting for something that they know is the pinnacle of the lifetime body of work, for them to put that aside and go, we're just competing here. You seem like a dude. I'm a dude. We can probably have a beer together after this.
Well, that's it, man. I mean, like, you got the two of the baddest men, two of the bad, like, you know, the craziest finishers on the planet. They have so much, you know, in common, akin with themselves. But you find Tommy Aspinall does that anyway. Like, you know, he obviously with the Much and Tybura fight, they were looking quite friendly beforehand as well. And it just sort of seems like that energy that he gives off is like it's embraced with those people. And I guess we don't want to see this in every single fight. It's kind of nice after like a war, a 5-round war, they get into the last round, they've earned each other's respect, and then they give a little bit of a hug. That's nice to see as well. Like, you know, but I guess it only really, as you were saying before, people kind of smell bullshit from a mile away. Authenticity is key. And because he exudes this authenticity, it's nice to see this kind of embrace in a fucking blood sport, you know? It's
absolutely, man.
It's cool.
Completely. So I think he went into this fight with the shortest or the second shortest average fight time.
I think they were 1 and 2, right?
They were 1 and 2. Tom Aspinall's average fight time was 2 minutes and 19 seconds. Mm. He went into the toughest matchup of his career and shortened his and reduced his average fight time even further. Do you know how bananas that is?
Sounds like only something Khamzat would have been able to do back in the day, but before he got into that war with Gilbert Burns. But goddamn, man, it's Yeah, it's astounding. It really, really is. It's like proof in the pudding.
Absolutely. You know what? I just hope good things for Sergei Pavlovich and his, you know, he puts his back. What I'd like to see Sergei Pavlovich fight Cyril Garn next. I think that's the fight to make.
Yes.
I think that would be really, really good because obviously Cyril is a very technical striker. We've seen him manage the big hitters before. Sergei offers something different, though, than Jairzinho or Derek Lewis. He's more calculated, and he does have other dimensions to his game that Cyril Garn definitely doesn't have, i.e. wrestling and the ability to take it to the mat. So I think that's a great fight, and I have no doubt in my mind that Tom Aspinall and Sergei Pavlovich will cross paths inside the octagon again at some point. They're just too good. And they're both on that same upwards trajectory. Sergei Pavlovich doesn't go down in my estimation as a result of this. And I'm a fan of his for life after this fight because of the way that him and Tom conducted themselves and how cool that was. And you know what? They could fight again. And next time, that first shot that Sergei lands could be the one that puts Tom out. You just never know. And that's the beauty of heavyweight fighting. Now, Tommy Aspinall doesn't want to wait. He doesn't want to sit around, certainly wait for Jon Jones and Stipe and Miocic to maybe possibly get their shit together and fight. Obviously, Jon Jones is injured. He's not going to be around for a while. The earliest you're probably going to see him back is actually in Madison Square Garden in 12 months' time from now. So there's no way that Tom Aspinall is going to sit around, wait. In fact, he's already come out and said he's not waiting around for the winner of that fight. So what do you do?
Oh, man. Just looking at the roster and who's ready, you'd think the rematch versus Blades, you'd think Gyalton Almeida, if you want to give
it. Gyalton Almeida.
They're skipping the queue, that's the thing. Like, you know, you've got Cyril Garn, but, you know, as you said, I think Sergey's a better fight for him. Like, I would prefer to see that, you know, if the numbers aren't the issue. Realistically, I think he's just worth... It's worth waiting around for Jones. I don't know, man. It's
So here's the deal. He says he wants to fight at UFC 100. He'll defend the interim belt if he has to. So that's fine. Okay. Curtis Blades is one option because I know Aspinall will want to get that back. Curtis Blades isn't, in my opinion, though, worthy of that that fight, especially because in his last fight, he got chinned by Pavlovich. And I know it wasn't like he was beating Aspinall up and the injury happened later on in the fight or something that Blades did cause the injury. I could see a roundabout way to argue it. To me, there's just no, unless there's no other opponent, Curtis Blades shouldn't get that shot. But I'd rather see Curtis Blades coming off a face fisting by Pavlovich than Gyalton Almeida get that opportunity. Because I'm sorry, we talked about this, but Gyalton's gone right to the back of the queue. So that leaves us with a couple of options. Cyril Garn, who absolutely shat it down his leg and basically said no before this whole interim situation came about, Cyril Garn flatly refused to fight Tom Aspinall.
Yeah.
Now Tom Aspinall's got the hardware. All of a sudden, Mr. Cyril Garn is interested. No, my friend. You can go deal with the polar bear yourself. You can do that in France as a main event. Put Benoit Saint-Denis in the co-main event. We'll come back to that.
Ooh, baby.
Assassin a little bit later on.
Talk dirty to me. Yeah.
Talk dirty to me indeed. But there's only one fight to make.
Are you talking about Ndrogo?
No, the UFC, I understand, want to preserve, if they can, Jon Jones versus Stipe Miocic. But the one thing that the UFC does is they wait for no man and they crack on with this and they don't fuck around with interims here and there and champions in recess and so on and so forth. Jon Jones is Jon Jones. And when he fights and whoever he fights, it will be monumental. I'm sorry, Stipe Miocic, 41 years old, who hasn't stepped foot inside the octagon for 3 years. And the last time he did, we saw you getting flatlined by Francis Ngannou. First of all, you technically and realistically don't actually deserve a title shot. But B, you certainly don't get to hold up the division and a surging interim champion in Tom Aspinall because you think you're owed something and owed a fight with Jon Jones.
Yeah.
If that's the case, if that's all you want to do, Stipe Miocic, if it's only a legacy fight, that's fine. But Jon Jones has to give up the belt. And you upgrade Tom Aspinall to full champion and you let it crack on. And then Jon Jones and Stipe Miocic can have their all-day pensioners scrap, you know, whenever they want to down the road. But you cannot, as Stipe Miocic, sit there and hold up and wait. Now, Stipe might be interested in this fight, and I don't want to be unfair to Stipe because he was never offered the interim title shot. He confirmed that.
Yeah.
So maybe the UFC says to him, okay, now the interim title shot is owned by someone, and it's owned by a worthy champion. So if you go and win this, you become the interim champion, and then your fight with John Jones is exponentially even bigger because you've got hardware and you're unifying the division. So you could absolutely sell that to Stipe. You make enough bread and you say to him, you've got something to enhance your legacy here. Whereas without that, maybe I understand why he goes, oh, I'm not just going to fight some undeserving guy. Yeah. I can see that. But really, the only fight to make for me for Tom Aspinall is Stipe Miocic. And then we see, because if Tom Aspinall handles Stipe the way I think he will handle him, like a drunk scrapper outside of a club on Friday night, I think he handles Stipe absolutely no problem. Especially the way, you see that limp he walked into the arena with? He looked 106, never mind 41. Like Stipe, his wife didn't like she was there, to just watch the fight with him. She looked like they was there to get him in and out of the car and get him out in and out of his wheelchair and make sure if he falls down, there's someone to help him get back up. It was crazy. Man, but I think Tom Aspinall runs through Stipe Miocic. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. The UFC has got the dollars running in their eyes of John Jones versus Stipe. But I'm telling you, if Tom Aspinall runs through Stipe, the fight in the UK, John Jones versus Tom Aspinall for all the marbles or in a stadium in the US, it doesn't matter. Wherever you put that fight, that is baddest man of all time. That is the fight that you get to sell. Tom Aspinall versus John Jones, greatest of all time, new breed heavyweight GOAT. That's magic. That's 1.5 million pay-per-view buys easily, especially if you do the undercard right. The UFC is in a win-win situation here. But don't hold up Tommy Aspinall. Let him get his bread. Let him get his pay-per-view points. And let him fight. Put him on UFC 300. Do the right thing.
I agree, man. I agree in all facets there. It just really does depend because it just sort of seems like if it's going to be Jones or Stipe's last fight, that would be the only thing that I think that would stop that from happening. And it would honestly give Jones a really good fucking advantage because he's now skipped Stipe, if this were the case, and just gets straight to find Tommy Aspinall or vice versa. So he's skipping one of the dangerous people that he's trying to build this legacy of. Look, I mean, yeah, it's hard to think about different outcomes. I would probably think that if Jones and Stipe gets locked in, they give him Cyril Garn, they do something in France, and an English versus France thing is always sellable. They might just have to take that one on the chin. Cyril Garn might just have to fucking, say sorry, or sorry for not taking the fight. Now I want it. I don't know what it is. It just depends because I don't think Tommy Aspinall is one to hold a grudge. I know he will say, "Look, you didn't want the fight then, but fuck it." Yeah. I mean, I got
to get
me another house in Wales.
I'll allow it to happen on two conditions, three conditions. One, the fight is held in the UK in a stadium. Two, Cyril Garn only gets paid in cheese, baguettes, and francs.
And he's only going to do that anyway.
And three, he has to kneel in front of Tom Aspinall in Trafalgar Square and beg for the fight.
I'm just going to say, man, I don't think Cyril has good enough ground game to even kneel.
Yeah, he'll kneel down and we look up. What do now? How do I get up from this?
Man, yeah, look, I think there's so many options here, but it's like, since it's all up in the air, we can only let the fates decide. You never know what's going to happen, I guess. But this wasn't even the main event of the fucking night.
It was the British people's main event. But you were absolutely right. Let's move on because we had another incredible fight, more legacy defining moments, two absolute killers, two warriors. And I've got to say, man, I know he was out for a while, but I was disappointed with Jiří's game plan and approach. I know that's the way he fights, but you can't go in a wide-based stance against Alex Pereira and not check leg kicks and expect to come out of there alive. After two leg kicks, it was over. He'd lost all of his base. He'd lost all of his movement. And it was just a matter of if not when Pereira would catch him. That was it. That was the deciding fight. You cannot go into a fight with Alex Pereira, let him get off two or three leg kicks on you and think that you're going to be fine. He's superhuman.
He's just made of steel and rocks and Brazilian gods, man. It's all fucking crazy. Immediately getting swelled up. Even in the lead up, DC having his 10% power, calf kick.
You know what the insane? I know. You know what the insane thing about that was? You watch him throw it against DC and then you watch him throw it in the cage. There's no discernible difference in the technique. He's He throws it the same. The windup is the same. He just like powers with his hip or not. But
you cannot read it. It's so fast
and it's so powerful. If he fights Magomed Ankalaev, he might cut his legs in half. We might see the first dismemberment inside the UFC if he fought Magomed Ankalaev, because that was it. It was all over then. Yiri's game is on his movement, his being able to get in and out, but find angles, switch stances, hit you, move, be unpredictable. That was it. It was all over. And I can't remember. No. Had a parlay that was unsuccessful. Thank you, Mackenzie Dern. We'll get onto that soon. But 5 of 6 legs got up, and I didn't pick that one because I thought, well, I know what happens if Yiri comes in the way he usually, but he's smart. He's studied Pereira. He's had a long time to think about this. Surely he'll not let him get off the leg kicks. And then that was, but what I did bet was the fight just wouldn't go the distance. There was no way these two guys are going the distance. Pereira's cardio is questionable. It was not going 5 rounds. And if Yiri got it to the ground and was able to keep him there, he would get the finish. Mm. And yeah, I'm so impressed with Alex Pereira, though.
Oh, so I mean, same here. I just feel like I think everyone loves Yiri. Yiri and Pereira is probably really. I mean, like, they just both seem like great characters, and we just think their stories and their the promos that they're cutting and everything. I just feel like Yiri could have spent 3 less days in a dark room and 3 days checking kicks. You know, I mean, like, that would have been a better use of time. I mean, there's only so much mindfulness you're going to bring into a fucking war with someone. And yeah, it's just, I'm a little bit sad as well. Maybe I was a bit too G'd up on Yiri getting his title back and stuff. And then again, I mean, we shouldn't be counting out Alex Pereira. The guy is fucking ginormous. He's skilled. He's one of the best on the planet.
He might have holes in his game, but those holes are masked by the fact that what he does well, he does better than anyone on the planet. That's the trick, man. That's the secret sauce that he's cooking with. And you know what? Like I said before, I think we see Tommy Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich cross paths once more time. There's no way that Yiri and Laris, as long as Alex Pereira stays at light heavyweight and doesn't try to be a complete utter lunatic and go up to heavyweight, which, by the way, there was hints and whispers about during fight week. Adam Catterall from Fight Disciples and TNT channel in the UK said after he'd done his interview with him, he was sort of chatting through the translator, and he said it wasn't said officially. He said, but there was inferences that, ooh, maybe Alex would like to go up and have a crack at heavyweight, because at the moment when he goes in, he's 220 something. He only needs to not cut weight and he could go in at 240, and that's like Cain Velasquez type weight. And I, you know, don't fancy him against like Tommy Aspinall or anything like that, but Alex Pereira against you can see him winning some fights at heavyweight. I don't think he has to win the title, but you can see
you give him a Marcin Tybura or something. You give him
he chopped Marcin Tybura to pieces.
Exactly. You just give him one of the Eastern European lads that just maybe aren't as aesthetically pleasing. You know, they look like they've had one too many big bowls of a goulash or whatever they've had. But yeah, man, I think light heavyweight's probably the right place for him. I mean, if you feed him some sandwiches for about 6 months and plump him up a little bit, I reckon he'd have success there as well. And imagine the legacy. People would not ever doubt him if he's had a belt in 3 weight classes. No one's done it before.
No one's done it before. And the same thing would happen to him that happened to Cyril Garn if John Jones fought him. But can you imagine if he landed a leg kick on John Jones's spindly-ass legs?
Ooh, I don't know, man. Feel like we need to not, I mean, I can see it happening, like, physically, but every time that he's been kicked in the leg, John Jones just still wins. So it's like,
but he hasn't been kicked by Poatan.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, we never know. Like, you know, when an unstoppable force, you know, meets, it's all wild. But yeah, like, I think even Dana was a little bit, he wasn't as G'd up as everyone else, I think, when it came down to, is he, you know, his accolades in the sport and, you know, is he the best of all time and stuff? He was more like, you know what? He's an impressive fighter, but it's like, it's more, I feel like he knows he's given him a layup, and that's probably why he wasn't as G'd up as everyone else. You know, you talk about, you know, he's a double-timed glory kickboxing champion.
It's amazing. Yeah.
But it's amazing. Like, but you also got to hold a belt as well. Maybe that's another thing. I don't know. But I feel like Dana's
You got to defend it, but without a doubt, what he's done in 11 fights to be a two-weight class UFC champion, and he's beaten four champions: Israel Adesanya, Sean Strickland, Yuri Prohachka, and
Jan Blachowicz.
Jan Blachowicz, thank you very much. By the way, that was a super close fight, and that's the fight I would like to see them run back. Because we're still waiting for Jamal Hill for a while, and I think Poatan does nasty things to Jamal Hill while we're on that topic.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I think that's the fight. As I said, Magomed Ankalaev hasn't earned that fight. One, he had that shitty draw with Blachowicz. Then he had that shit with Johnny Walker. That looks like it's going to be run back.
That's
pre-booked, Mr. John Anik. So that's a fun fight. I can see either of those guys are obviously going to put themselves in the picture, but that needs time to play out. Alexander Rakic. Oh, no, that's the fight that's been booked, I think. Blachowicz versus Rakic 2 has been booked for...
Oh.
Yeah, so Rakic is coming back. So that's a fight. So all of a sudden, both of these guys are umming and ahhing and emerging to see who's going to get the next title shot. Whoever has the most impressive victory, I think, will get it. And I hope it's Jan Blachowicz. But who knows, man? It's a crazy sport. But the whole point of talking about this is that on one hand, yes, Pereira was fast-tracked for Israel Adesanya. Of course he was. There was the narrative. We brought him in. Of course they weren't going to give him Khamzat Chimaev middleweight. Or who else is a really good wrestler at middleweight? Jack Hermanson or Roman. It's like someone who was just going to impose their game plan and take away that narrative because the UFC had pay-per-views to sell. And they also needed a viable challenger for Izzy because there wasn't one at the time. He came in. He created that narrative. He allowed... And again, people talk about Izzy, oh, what a mistake enticing Pereira out of the alcoholism and out of the bar and bring... No. What Pereira and Izzy have done for each other is enhance each other's legacies. He's his Magic Jordan to his Larry Bird. These guys have upped each other's legacy. Everyone needs a hero and a villain. Everyone needs a rival to push them and challenge each other every step of the way. And those two have done that for one another. There is a fight with them again in the future at 185 or 205 or a catchweight. It doesn't matter. It could be in the UFC. It could be in kickboxing. It could be in the McDonald's car park. It doesn't matter. Those two dudes are going to be linked, inextricably linked until the end of time. They will never, ever stop trying to jaw and fight with one another because that is what they are destined to do. But Pereira took his opportunities. And then when it was offered to him, he just did enough to beat former champion Blachowicz, which was a tough challenge for him. He just did enough in the eyes of the judges. The opportunity was given to him and he took it. The opportunity was given and afforded to Magomed Ankalaev. He shit the bed and dribbled down his leg when the vacant belt was up there. He then did it again against Johnny Walker by throwing the illegal strikes. Should it have been called off? No, it shouldn't have, but he shouldn't have put himself in that position. Alex Pereira, on the other hand, has gone, I'll make the right decision. I'll say yes to this. I'll do that. And he's found himself with two UFC belts and he's become champ in 11 fights in half the time it took Conor McGregor to achieve the same accomplishments as the first man to ever do it.
Incredible.
And now he's written himself into the Hall of Fame and there are questions about his legacy as one of the greatest of all time. Now, because of the caveats that we've talked about, I don't see it personally. But I'm not going to doubt him because any one shot can change the course of a fight. A few more wins and all of a sudden he starts to put himself in the picture. Some title defenses and so on and so forth. I actually got into it, surprise, surprise, someone about this. And people always putting Khabib Nurmagomedov in the greatest of all time conversation. You cannot do that. Greatest and best do not mean the same thing. Best means most talented, most dominant, and you can project how certain fights could have gone in the future. Greatest is your body of work. What did you actually do? Yeah, you retired undefeated, but you could have had a lot more fights. You chose not to. That's your prerogative. That does not mean greatness. You were the best. I will listen to arguments every day of the week that Khabib Nurmagomedov is the best lightweight of all time. I will not hear any argument that he is the greatest of all time because he 100%. Barely. But and that is the same for Poatan right now. Is he one of the best fighters to ever come into the UFC? Yeah, absolutely he is because of how elite that skill set is. Is he one of the greatest despite these crazy accomplishments? No, he's not. But he's building that body of work, and if he keeps going for a couple more years, whew, you never know, man. You never know.
When you talk about that greatness, all you have to do is just talk to some top fighters and say, who do you think is the greatest of all time? They'll say GSP, they'll say John Jones.
Unless it's Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, maybe not. But yeah, you know what I mean? That like they're going to find, because they understand the times were like when this was right, the caliber of opponents were back then. The And yeah, it just sort of seems like even, I think you're completely right. Best, yes. Greatest, not yet. But time will tell, man. I mean, he's 36, so I mean, he's still got some time. I think he's in his prime right now. He's obviously fucking strong as fuck if he's just knocking everyone the hell out. So yeah, I'm excited to see where he goes from here.
100%, man. And, you know, Jamal Hill's still listed as champion for some reason on the UFC website. That will get corrected. But whoever is champion by the time Jamal Hill comes back will have to defend the belt against him. So I'm very curious to see what that looks like. But overall, man, the UFC light heavyweight division has gone from historically being a glamour division to you've got Jiří and Alex there. Jan's nearly 40 years old. Magomed Ankalaev is like watching paint dry. Alexander Rakic is coming off a serious injury and is not the most exciting fighter. And then you're down to Krylov, Walker, Anthony Smith, who somehow was trying to bullshit his way into the equation of a fight with Alex Pereira. Anthony Smith, my goodness.
Yeah, man.
Volkan Ozdemir is still top 10. Like, what is this division these days? It kind of stinks.
Yeah, man. The only what I'm looking at now is like, you know, obviously we have the top boys there. And yeah, it's just a lot of hits and misses with a lot of these sort of guys that hang around the top 15. What I am keen to see is the rise of Khalil Roundtree Jr. He is just on a fucking tear, and I love to see it. He's violent and he's exciting to watch, and he just makes it a fucking street fight every single time. He's pretty close to bringing soccer kicks back. Vadim Nemkov as well, and another of, what's his name, Azamat Zakhanov, like all full win streaks. So I mean, you know, it's I feel like there's potential, but it's just not yet. It's not the top guys, and so far, you know, they're booking the top guys for these fights, so.
Well, you know who I am interested in seeing, and we'll move on and talk about the rest of the card. But Carlos Big Sexy Ullberg
Oh,
has
fuck yeah.
just got a fight booked, and he's gonna get to feast on the remains of Dominic Reyes, which is gonna be really cool to see. And yeah, he's then on a, you know, one loss.
Feast on the remains of Dominic Reyes. He's on, well, I mean, it'll be his fifth fight and a loss in a row. So.
Yeah, exactly. But as opposed to five wins in a row for Carlos Ullberg. And I don't think he's ranked, is he, Carlos Ullberg yet? But he'll, you know, a win over Reyes. No, a win over Reyes will put him in there. You go, okay, that's some fresh blood into the division. And you never know, man. Izzy's taking some time away. Maybe he puts on a bit of size, does some lifting. Maybe Israel Adesanya comes back as a 205. You never know. You never know what's going to happen, but the division needs some spicing up. But anyway, a diagnosis of the 205 division is for another day, another time, another place, because we've got some other fights to talk about on this card here. Let's go to the fight that was sandwiched in the middle. And let me say, by the way, what a main card. What an event in general for the 30th
Crazy.
anniversary. Bang, 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 bang. Stoppage, 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 stoppage. It was absolutely incredible. All five fights on the main card ended in TKO or KO stoppages. Jessica Andrade snapped the losing streak that we talked about, absolutely beat the piss out of Mackenzie Dern. It was embarrassing by the end of it. And Mackenzie Dern had just completely regressed. She'd showed improved striking against Angela Hill, and Jessica Andrade had been wilded on discipline. And Andrade went, actually, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait for her to make mistakes. She's leaving her chin hanging in the air. She's the one being wild and sloppy, and I'm going to tag her. And she did just that. Very impressive performance from her, but very shitty from Mackenzie Dern. And had I known, and this sort of came out during the fight and social media afterwards, she left Jason Perillo, she left her existing camp and replaced everyone in her corner with members of her family. When's that ever worked well for anyone as a like a weird emotional? I know Tom Aspinall's dad is his coach. That guy like is a proper like legitimate MMA coach. Quit his job to coach him. They've been through it all together. And Mackenzie Dern decided to like switch up what was working well for her and then bring her dad and her uncle and some other people into the corner, who then proceeded to tell her, "You won the first round," after getting her face caved in.
Yeah, I mean, like she keeps talking so much about like her divorce and stuff like that and how it's like affecting us. I reckon it's just I need more family and positive people around me, and if I can do both, maybe it'll work.
Bro,
but obviously, fucking fucking didn't.
this was you've heard of the Battle of the Alamo. This was the Battle of the Alimony, because both of these women were throwing down for their divorce payments. That's where their fight purses were going, which is absolutely madness to say. By the way, Mackenzie Dern literally tweeted out, the guy married me for a green card, but he seemed like a trustworthy guy. That's the first red flag. The marriage was based off a green card, and then you got sucked into this. Like, I don't know what to tell you, Mackenzie. You are definitely stupid.
Yeah, man. Otherwise, it was good to see Jessica Andrade.
100%.
Not doing those stupid looping hooks that, you know, and just trust, you know, staying composed and walking her down and trusting in her power instead of, you know, overexposing herself and throwing to the wind. So it was a big level up in skill, and I reckon she'll continue to thrive if she just keeps doing that. So,
yeah.
But otherwise, man, I think the fight that we all want to talk about is the next one. What was that, Lewis? Who is this? Tell us.
The most violent man on the planet, Benoit Saint Denis. Oh my goodness! I told you going into this that I was a fan of Matt Frivola. I am all the way on Team Steamroller, baby. He's a great guy. He's an entertaining, fan first, fan favorite performer, but I told you, BSD is built differently. This man is just 27 years old, and when he retired from strangling and knifing men in the jungles of West Africa, he said, you know what? My bloodthirst has not been satisfied. I've got to go into an octagon, and I've got to humiliate men who've been fighting inside a cage for much longer than I, because I am the man that kills people and stabs you 100 times, and you are dead before your body even hits the ground. I am the most dangerous man in the UFC. Benoit Saint Denis.
100%, man. This guy is fucking, he's incredible at what he does. Like, literally incredible. And I just remember the first fight being such a sad, you know, start to his career. Like, you know, him basically almost dying. And that ref, I think, probably got fired for that.
He got fired that night. He got taken off other fights that same night.
Good. Because that was fucking disgusting. And, you know, and the situation for that fight wasn't even, I think he was coming off, the other guy missed weight, and I'm pretty sure he came in like on short notice to do it. But everyone's seeing him now. The world is seeing him over and over again, just fucking, you know, just continue to level up, continue to blow everyone's expectations out of the fucking water and just be a violent son of a bitch. And that's fucking cool to see.
It is. Oh,
I love it.
It is. And you know what the other thing is? He's not only violent and destructive and has all of that, he is nails, man. You will have to kill him to get him out of that cage. And that was proven in his UFC debut. Everyone was saying, stop the fight. This is inhumane. You are taking years off his life. You are doing irreparable damage to this man. Benoit Saint Denis went, yes, to a normal person, but I am not normal.
I've absorbed the souls.
He absorbed the punching power and just took over and just transformed it into an absolute terrorist streak on the UFC 155-pound division. He took that beating and then better than ever, and came out and ran through absolutely everyone. And it was okay. Frivola's the step up now. Now you're in the rankings, and he didn't just beat him. He flogged him. And that head kick wasn't even shin to head. It was tip of foot to eyebrow, and it still put Frivola out immediately. This man is different. And I guarantee you, he will be the most ducked man in the division. No one is going to want to fight him, because he will come in and he will be ranked 12 to 14, probably in that range. They might give him a bit of a bump, but no one in that middle chasing pack is gonna want to risk their ranking taking on this absolute monster out of France. There's a couple of names that he called out. He said, yeah, he wants to fight Justin Gaethje for the BMF belt. Yeah, sign me up, but that's not going to happen. He said he wants to fight Dustin Poirier. Yeah, sign me up, but that's not going to happen either.
Exactly.
But he mentioned one name, Matheus Gamrot. Now, Gamrot weighed in as the backup fighter. He's right on the precipice of a title shot. He got his win over Fazeev, albeit in these questionable circumstances, but it was a very, very, very good fight. Gamrot has no incentive to take it unless you promise him the world. You say, Gamrot, you're going to main event in Poland, full arena. We are going to give you a shitload of money guaranteed. We're going to make it well worth your while. And if you lose this fight, you're going to be able to eat 800 pierogies a day until you die. Like, that's the kind of money we're going to be talking about. But I still don't know if he takes that fight. So what do you do with Benoit Saint-Denis? Because my goodness me.
I think I know the exact fight, man. I think you give him Rafael Fiziev. I think it would be such a fucking brutal war. Rafael Fiziev's coming off two losses. He needs a big name win to start, you know, increasing his popularity, let's say. But, you know, it's almost the time for him to lose three in a row. That's not a very fucking good thing. So, I mean, who else do you give him? I think that would be the fucking fight. That would get me pumped. That would get me out of bed. That would get me up in bed. That is...
But you're 100%. That is a great matchup, but you're going to be lying in bed waiting a long time for that to happen. It's a really bad knee injury that Fiziev has. Benoit Saint-Denis is not going to sit around for 6, 8, 12 months even for Fiziev to be ready and come back. So then you go, okay, Jalen Turner. Jalen Turner's not going to want to take that fight. Dan Hooker's booked against Bobby Green. Maybe you give him the winner of that fight as like a, hey, you know, don't kill them.
I reckon, well, I mean, you just look at the rankings, you'd think Mansourukian. I mean, he's on his last two wins as well as Teus Gamrot. So it's like, I suppose those guys don't want to be fighting down the rankings and fighting such a dangerous motherfucker. That's the problem.
No one's
going to take the fight.
Doesn't Sarukian have a fight booked, though? Yeah, Sarukian's fighting Beneil Dariush.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
All right, so, well, he's got his opportunity.
In December. If Sarukian wins that fight, he's shooting up the rankings to 4 and doesn't want it. Now, if you put a man of Beneil Dariush's age in with Benoit Saint-Denis, you might see death. There might be a death in the cage.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, just do it in Yaz Island and then everyone's going to be stoked because after the last time he praised the unpopular religion, as not the people's favorite that night. But you're right. But, like, you know, so close to this recent fight, we've got a card. We've got Dan Hooker versus Bobby Green, and we got Armin Sarukian versus Beneil Dariush. Those are 4 prospects now that you give to Benoit. And
All 4 of them in one night. I'm still picking Benoit in every single one of them.
Man, I mean, like, maybe the loser, you know, one of the losers of this, if it's Armin, Beneil, Bobby, or Dan, maybe that will be the next call because it's a similar fight amount of time between fights for them. You know, December 2nd is only less than a month away.
Yeah,
I think it's the responsible thing to do, and I think the only person who would actually take that fight, I feel like Bobby Green talks a bit more shit than he. And he'd actually
Dan Hooker takes that fight.
Dan Hooker takes it 100% day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
100% he does. Dan, the handman Hooker, takes that fight on every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan Hooker takes that fight and then invites Benoit Saint-Denis to be the speaker at his funeral. Part of the contract is that BSD has to do the eulogy in Maori at my funeral, and they'll figure it out. But okay, here's a hypothetical for you though. Those four guys. You put in a room for the night. Beneil Dariush, Armin Sarukian, Bobby Green, and Dan Hooker, all on the same team, and you give Benoit Saint-Denis a toothbrush.
Jesus,
4-on-1. Who's winning that night? It's Benoit Saint-Denis all night long.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a narrow corridor. I reckon it's got to be Benoit. But I mean, it's just got to be it, man. He's a dangerous guy, and
within 3 minutes, he's fashioned it into the sharpest blade known to man. Within 6 minutes, Beneil Dariush's Achilles have been sliced to pieces. He's on the floor crawling around, and Benoit Denis slicing his throat. Then he moves on to Armin, deals with Bobby Green, and finishes up with Dan Hooker. And then he just ends up wearing Dan Hooker's skin because he likes his tattoos.
So, man, I mean, funny enough, it's all his colors. Everyone's going to be beaten red, white, and blue. So, you know, vive la France. Let's go, baby.
Revolution. Superb. And then the fight that opened this up, tell you what, talk about a man who's seized his opportunity in the UFC with two firm hands. Diego Lopez. Holy cow.
He's incredible, man. And Dana White is...
White absolutely loves this dude. He paid him his win bonus on his debut because of how close he came to winning. Dana White does not easily part with money, and he threw out bonuses to all finishers on the main card for this one. You know, could have done a little bit more, but come on, Dana. But Diego Lopez, just in post-fight bonuses since he's come into the UFC, he's 3-for-3. He's made 150 grand just in bonuses, which is probably more, which is not probably, is definitely more money than he ever come close to making in his life fighting. I hazard a guess that one of those bonuses was more than he ever made fighting up until this date. He's now got 100%. Three. He's now putting himself in a great position to get a ranked guy at 145 pounds just because he's so dynamic. The weight class is deep. There's so many dudes, but you could easily see him getting a top 15 guy and the UFC going, all right, you've smoked everyone. Let's see what you're actually made of. And I'm very curious, what does Topology rank him as? Let's see his formula. They've got him as 17th best MMA fighter on the planet because of their formula. And some of those guys aren't even in, I don't believe are in the UFC. Let me see. Are they all in the UFC?
I think they're, because like Sabatini is not a shit fighter. He's really fucking good. He's lost in his last, he's lost next round, but he's lost once in his last nine fights. So, and he's beat Alex Caceres, he's beat Lucas Almeida. Like, those are good fighters as well. So, like, Pat Sabatini ain't no walkover. And he's just made him, he just knocked the fucker out. So, like, you know, it's beautiful. What a fucking rise to glory. I reckon he's going to have a great career in the UFC.
I really hope so. I hate being I hate that Dan Ige has just become, like, the gatekeeper. Let's feed Dan Ige, like, tough guys and see what happens. But... Yeah. Let's make that fight and find out, man. I think he's ranked, Danny Gay's ranked 13th in the world. Let's see it. Alex Caceres, someone like that, someone on the fringes of top 15. Let's do it, because he's a character. He's got Brazil repping him. He's got Mexico repping him. He's got the flowing crazy hair. He's just got everything about him, man. He is a character and he's a personality and people are absolutely drawn to him. Just what a performance, what a character, and what a way to seize your opportunity coming into the UFC. Bang, 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 150K later. Just remarkable.
I agree, man. Like, I mean, any of those fights I'm interested in, if it's Caceres, Dan Ige, even Sadiq Youssef, he's just, like, he lost, but yeah, I mean, he could have done better in that fight. Yeah, I think Sadiq won't go that far down the rankings to fight. But yeah, man, what a special guy. And, you know, speaking of special, Steve Ursegg is one of the most technically, like, sound, like, he, like, absolutely no holes in that guy's game whatsoever. I feel like he's maybe missing some punching power, I think, just because he's so fucking long for the division. It just doesn't seem like he's going to be that big of a finisher in terms of, like, knockouts. But he's every single position that he moves himself in is perfect. It was really, really, like, masterful to watch. Yeah, really, really impressive.
Big fan of old Astro boy Steve Ursegg. Nice to see him get a win over a tough opponent there in Alessandro Costa. Like you said, went to the judges. There was one moment there where you thought Ursegg might get the finish. I think he actually did. He dropped Costa, I think, once during the fight. But Costa survived and got through to the end. But yeah, very impressive performance. Looking forward to seeing what's next for him in this. Again, featherweight division. Not featherweight. Flyweight division, excuse me. Steve, he's ranked 14th. Probably not going to move too far for a decision win over a guy that's not ranked, but nonetheless, he should hold his ranking there. I think he'd probably be a bit harsh on Ulanbekov to just bump Ursegg for that performance ahead of him in the rankings. But nonetheless, man, very, very, very good performance. And looking forward to seeing what's next for him. Hopefully he's back on a card sooner rather than later. Obviously, the UFC is going back to Australia a few times next year. It won't be Volkanovski. It's not going to be in February. But hopefully Steve Ursegg, maybe March, is able to get a fight in front of a home crowd. Let's wait see. Lupe Godinez beat the brakes off Tabitha Ritchie. Sorry, Jamie. I don't know how a judge gave a split decision.
That was absolutely insane.
That one judge was just having shockers all night. Yeah. Just a true definition of potato brain. Like, that dude has definitely put his head in the microwave a couple of times just to see what would happen. And this is the result. 30-27, Tabitha Ritchie should be a jailable offense. Nice for Lupe Godinez. She gets a record. She first woman to have four wins in the UFC in a calendar year. She's a gamer, and she said she wants to fight ASAP. So very cool. Mateus Rebecki.
Yeah. That guy's thick as fuck, boy.
That is one thick Polak.
Man, he's that man loves pierogi. Actually, just looking at his fucking body, probably not. But yeah, that was incredible, man. Like he just took his Roosevelt Roberts length out of the equation completely by literally just terminatoring the fuck out of that fight. And yeah, submission, man. It's Yeah, it was really, really cool to see. Really impressive.
Yeah, Roserup Roberts gets his second bite at the apple coming into the UFC. Short notice fight. Misses weight and then gets stopped. That guy is out of the UFC very, very quickly.
Dude, one of the best fights of the night. In a card that was like filled with amazing fights and amazing things, the majority draw between Nazem Sadikov and Borchev. What a fucking war, man. Those guys were, it was just so, such an incredible striking display, man. I loved it. I loved every second of that fight.
That was awarded fight of the night. Both of these guys pocketed 50K for their efforts. That was absolutely brilliant. The draw, by the way, the draw was the correct decision. And yeah. I, you know, maybe they run it back. Maybe they say, hey, let's do it again. Or in the future, I'd love to see these guys go on again, because that was just a super, super exciting, super fun fight.
Incredible. Borchev first round for sure. Nazem second round for sure. But it was just like the recovery from Borchev was probably the most impressive thing, to not get Nazem to be able to, you know, push him out of that third round. And man, I love to see it. Mark Madsen, Olympian, taking the loss pretty fucking quickly. Knock the fuck out.
And he said, apparently he's going to retire as well, which, right. You know, see, like, well done, Olympic career. But he realized that getting knocked out and choked out in the UFC isn't all of, you know, that fun. And let's be honest, he's a boring fighter, man. He's an Olympic wrestler. He does what he does. But at his age as well, I think he's a bit older, Mark Madsen. Let's pull it up. He's 39 years old. Like, he's not going to get any better. His room for improvement is stopped. And once you find your level at that, and he found his level, then probably time to hang it up. So, you know, congratulations to him on a career. Got to the UFC, got some wins, represented his country at the Olympics in obviously one of the most difficult sports in wrestling, one of the oldest sports. So it's no mean feat to medal at the Olympics in wrestling. So, yeah, good on him. And then that shithouse...
Joshua Van Kart, like, fight was a good fight. That was like a really competitive fight. I really liked it, but obviously Joshua Van just came through. But the Jamal Emmers fucking knockout, 49 seconds. Unbelievable. Straight right and hammer fists. Got him out of there. Just a way to start the card from the very first, you know, people who skip the early prelims, stop it. Behave yourself.
Watch. Absolutely. 100%. And you know what? It's nice to see Dennis Bazooka just continue to lose and also get knocked out in devastating fashion, because he talks shit on Twitter, campaigned to get himself in the UFC, starts with two losses, gets knocked out, and it turns out he's an absolute scumbag. There was a, when he was, you know, fair play, he was younger, but he had if you Google it, it's all there, but he basically hid in a bush and jumped a guy in a McDonald's and beat the shit out of him for basically no reason, and he was a trained fighter at the time. So I got no time for Bazooka. So if the UFC want to keep him around one more time just to let me see him get knocked out again, I would enjoy that.
Yeah, no time for him. Even Volkan Uzdemir would especially have no time for him.
He would have a second. Now that's a fight I'd like to see. Put Volkan Uzdemir in with Dennis Bazooka. I know it's a slight difference in weight class there. Maybe. Of 140. But I don't care.
But it'd be a great spectacle. Let's bring it back to the old UFC days, huh?
Yeah, no weight, no time limit. Just give me death. Just an incredible card, man. The only thing I will say, and I saw this popping around on Twitter, and we'll get onto a quick preview look ahead, because we're nearly at the hour mark, so we'll just go deep into it. The one thing I did find strange, that I would have thought the broadcast and the event and the night itself would have been dripping in 30th anniversary stuff. Like, they had all of the celebrities and big names there. Like, it was obviously packed with people. Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson and Kid Rock came up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's always a big night when former president shows up. But there wasn't Ken Shamrock. There wasn't Hoist Gracie. So, by the way, I was watching back the original UFC 1 broadcast, and I need to correct myself here. He announced his name as Hoisey Gracie. So I'm going to be, he said on his little videotape, you know how they videotape themselves? It's like, do this. And he called himself Hoisey Gracie. So I'm going to start saying that now out of respect for the man, the myth, the legend, Hoisey. Thought they would have had all of those people there from UFC 1, bring him into the cage, sit him cage side, applaud. Mm. I thought it was weird, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, not if you can't afford to do that, but I just will say, I mean, the Brazilians on these, you know, in the rankings are not the greatest at English. You know, there's always a translator. It's not like a normally learned language there. It's not like it's taught in schools. So, I mean, can he say his own name in English? Really? Hoisey Gracie? Let's just, let's be, let's... So, you know, it's
Hoisey
just keep it in mind.
Hoisey doesn't know how to pronounce his own name. That would be a big scandal. Yeah, overall, man, what a tremendous night. And
amazing.
The next pay-per-view probably could maybe even be even better. But this firmly puts his hat in the ring for event of the year in mixed martial arts.
Oh, yeah, it was International Veterans Day as well. So shout out to all the veterans out there.
Oh, by the way, one last thing. You notice Benoit Saint-Denis going to make himself a superstar in the US? Did you hear what he said on the microphone? He thanked America for saving France's ass during World War II.
Yeah, right.
One way to get America to love you and to say thank you for World War II.
Yeah, man.
They love that. Wow. Right, let's move on. We've got a fight night this week. We'll do it very, very, very quickly because we've chatted so much about 295. But we've got a fight night between Brendan Allen and Paul Craig. Paul Craig becomes the first Scotsman to ever headline a UFC event, which is an incredible achievement for him and an even bigger achievement if he's ranked. Let me pull up the rankings again. He is ranked right now 13th. Oh. Brendan Allen is ranked 10th. I'm talking about UFC rankings.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Not apologies. And official rankings. So he can move into the top 10 with a win over Brendan Allen. And I'm not writing Paul Craig off. He's looked good, man. He's always in the fight with his incredible jiu-jitsu. So let's just wait and see. I'm very looking forward to see how it plays out. From an Aussie fight fan perspective, we've got Jake Matthews, co-main event against Michael Morales, which is going to be a fun fight. Mm-hmm. But overall, man, there's, you know, it's not a bad card, actually. Tom Aspinall's training partner, Mick Parkin, made his UFC debut recently as fighting a Dana White Contender Series guy, Chao Machado, who's a dominant Canadian domestic scene heavyweight. We've got Christian Leroy Duncan looking to bounce back from his disappointing UFC debut. He's a dynamic striker. Let's see who he goes against, Cesar Almeida. Charles Johnson, who's always super fun, opens up the card against another Dana White Contender Series guy. Charles Johnson, I believe this is the last fight on his contract or second last. So he's motivated and looking to have a good performance and get himself another deal with the UFC. So I'll be honest, this isn't going to be a fight night that I'm losing sleep over. I'm still not recovered from 295, but I will enjoy watching this on replay, even though it is in the Apex.
Yeah, man. I think there's not a lot of huge things to happen in any of the divisions, you know, really. These are all just sort of like, you know, flutterings of not even the top 15. But I'm keen to see the Amanda Ribas and Luana Pinheiro fight. That's going to be pretty cool. And Uros Medic as well. I mean, that guy looks fucking dangerous. So
that's
I'm
true.
Keen to see him fight. So I feel like if he has a good performance, he'll be in a good standing as well. But yeah, man, it'll be fun. Nothing that I hate. Nothing that I hate.
No, absolutely not. I've just seen Opman Azatai is fighting Darius Flowers as well. So let's see how that one goes. But yeah, man, great chatting to you. Tommy Aspinall's a champion. He's the baddest man on the planet. And I just can't wait to see what's next for him. I'm so happy for the guy.
Happy days. Well, it's always good to talk to you, brother. Guys, you can follow us at Punch Drunk Pod with an extra D on YouTube, Twitter at Punch Drunk Pod _ Instagram at Punch Drunk Pod. You can follow Lewis Glover at Lewis Glover MMA. You can follow me at Jamie Trezellian. And as always, guys, thanks for the support. Give us 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, wherever you are listening. If you're watching us on YouTube, give us a subscribe. Every little helps. Every like, you know, we love it. And it keeps us doing this stuff and getting us bantering about some blood sport, which we all enjoy. So, but I appreciate it, guys. Good to talk to you, mate.
Hell yeah, brother.
Peace.